planning for sea level rise. The sea level along the coast of Maine is rising and has been for several decades, about 8 inches since 1950. How much more will it rise before 2050? That's a question without a clear answer. A NOAA model shows another half foot of sea level rise. Others show much, much more than that. Sea level rise has a lot of implications for Maine's coastal communities. Not only erosion of beach and destruction of homes, but also road closures and infrastructure damage. I'm Jennifer Rooks. How are Maine's coastal communities planning for a future with higher seas? Are they doing enough? A new tool helps planners and all of us visualize what the future may look like. We'll learn about that and discuss what needs to happen now. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. All this week, Maine Public and news organizations around the world have taken part in a week-long reporting project called Covering Climate Now. This series comes in advance of the United Nations Climate Action Summit on Monday in New York. Today, we're going to discuss the threat of rising waters due to climate change. In the studio with me, Margaret Cushing. She's an emergency management coordinator with the Cumberland County Emergency Management Agency. Jeremy Bell is a river and coastal restoration director for the Nature Conservancy in Maine. And Peter Slovinsky, marine geologist with the Maine Geological Survey. As always, we want to hear from you. Has your community taken any steps to address rising coastal waters or other aspects of climate change? Have you personally? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Jeremy, we've heard about the threat of rising waters from climate change for some time now, but often in general terms, you're involved in a new effort to help people visualize what the future holds. Tell us about the project.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate being on. One of the messages I want to start with is that sea level rise is happening right now, and we're going to be experiencing more into the future. And so that's why the Nature Conservancy is working on online web tools to help communities plan for better infrastructure and better natural ecosystems for the future.
Sure. I mean, in this, I've been on the new Coastal Risk Explorer tool. We've posted this on our webpage and our Facebook page. Spent some time on it this morning. Really interesting. Can go right down into your neighborhood. How did you make this happen, and what does it do?
Well, it's a big effort. We spent a lot of time on developing data for this tool. And essentially what it does is it takes the sea level rise scenarios developed by Pete, by the way, and the Maine Geological Survey to analyze areas that would be flooded by high tides and sea level rise, and then the lack of access to emergency services for those communities essentially is what it does.
All right. Well, so Peter, tell us about how difficult it is to determine sea level rise, and then also what we're talking about. We're not just talking about high tide being this many inches higher than high tide was 10 years ago, are we? We're talking about storm surges and king tides and things like that.
Yeah, sure. So the fact is that sea level, like Jeremy said, is rising, and the rates of rise that we've been seeing over time have accelerated over, you know, the last 20 to 25 years or so. But there are ways that sea levels have been measured over about the last 100 years in Maine using tide gauges, basically. So there's a gauge in Portland. So we have been able to, even though the technology as to how you do that has changed over time, you're able to actually reconstruct a curve of how sea levels have changed over time. And over the last century or so, it's been about 7 inches or so. And the rate, again, has changed. And those scenarios are basically the underlying problem that are going to be compounded by storms and waves and things like that. So the scenarios moving into the future can be quite variable depending on the factors that are taken into account. But we're looking, you know, potentially at anywhere from, at a low scenario of 1 foot to some higher scenarios in the 4 to 6 foot range. To
when you say 1 foot, do you mean by what year?
20? So a lot of these scenarios are broken out by decade, for instance.
Right.
They're curves, basically, that go into the future that are tied to emissions and what humanity decides to do in terms of emissions. But there's also a lot of underlying science that goes into that that takes into account input from Antarctica, Greenland, land-based ice sheets, temperature changes and changes in the Gulf Stream and things like that, and how that might impact sea levels. But the basic scenarios are basically what happened over the last century is probably going to happen over the next century, which is around 1 foot, you could say, to medium to high scenarios of about 4 to 6 feet, where you start taking into account inputs from Antarctica and Greenland and maximum what we call thermal expansion, because there's really two things that are causing sea level changes that we're seeing today. The first is thermal expansion, which is the warming of the water column. So as the water warms, it expands. And then the second is volumetric increase. So there's a melting occurring of land-based ice sheets and glaciers that is contributing additional water volume to the oceans. And because of those two dominant factors, there's sea level rise. There's other factors that account for, you know, a smaller percentage, maybe about 10% of the sea level rise that we're seeing today, that account for, that's like how, what the land is doing in relation to the ocean, and also how we're storing water on land. And also, you know, what's happening with current systems like the Gulf Stream, and how that's influencing localized sea levels.
I understand that that it's difficult to forecast sea level rise for a number of reasons, but we do know that it will continue to rise, correct? Even if humankind stopped putting carbon into the atmosphere tomorrow, we will see sea level rise from what has already happened, correct?
Yeah, Jennifer, that's a great point. And I mean, we don't expect sea level rise to fall anytime soon. They're going to continue to rise, even if we stopped all emissions in 2020, for instance, which is one of the scenarios that these are tied to, which is relatively unlikely. We continue doing everything that we have been doing over the last, you know, century or so in terms of putting emissions down into the atmosphere. That would be more towards the extreme. So that's the business as usual scenario, which takes us to extreme levels, potentially between high and extreme.
So business as usual is the one putting us in the 4 to 6 feet rise.
Business as usual puts us in, unfortunately, a slightly higher scenario. They start getting a little bit scarier when you're talking about high to extreme. That's more in the 8 to potentially 11 foot range in the next 100 years.
Wow. Margaret, I want to bring you into the conversation. When you hear this conversation, what does this mean on the ground for emergency planners like you?
We look at mitigation as one of the primary situations. What are we going to do about this? How are we going to protect our communities? How are we going to have people protect their homes? So we look at building relationships. We looked at building a continuity type of situation where, okay, this is where we are now. Where are we going to be 5, 10, 20 years from now? And what can we do now to make sure that things are not going to get worse? So we look to work with our communities because we are Cumberland County Emergency Management. We work with the local emergency management agencies to help them in planning, to help them in practicing, to help them in figuring out what it is that they need to do to address these issues. Do we need to build roads higher? Do we need to put better drainage in certain areas? Do we need to have better building codes? That's the type of thing that we work on.
It's interesting to me, looking at the Coastal Risk Explorer tool this morning and punching in some towns, a lot of the risk seems to me, I mean, there is risk where people have homes in low-lying areas and they may be flooded. But another big part of the risk seems to me that people will not be able to access their homes because their road might get washed out. So even if their actual home is up on a cliff looking out over the ocean, they might not be able to get in or out. Is that your biggest concern at this point, Margaret, as you look at sea level rise?
That and coastal erosion. Those are the two that we really worry about. Yes, it's going to be difficult for some folks to be getting to their homes. What used to be a roadway may be a ferryway. And so what are we going to do about that? Mm-hmm. Do we create bridges now? Do we build higher bridges? What are we going to do that is going to make it so that these people can still access their homes, if their homes are there, and create spaces that are not buildable if they are in a flood zone. So looking in advance and saying, okay, this is a floodplain area. You can't build there. It may be prime territory, but in 20 years from now, this is going to be flooded. So we want to make sure that people understand that zoning ordinances, building codes are all part of this. And there's a good reason for that. The other thing that we want to encourage people to do is make sure you have flood insurance. Yeah. It can be as simple as that.
But is there enough going on now? Are we talking about something that may be happening with zoning ordinances in the future?
There is quite a bit going on now. As more and more towns begin to understand the possibilities of this happening, they are looking at their building codes, they are looking at their zoning ordinances, but there's a long way to go. And we still are trying to overcome some folks saying this isn't happening. So getting those relationships being built, those partnerships being built is very important as a starting point for us. We work hard with you folks and with the Nature Conservancy to get information out to the public. One of our primary things right at this point is public education. And what can we do to help you understand what is going to be happening?
All right. Well, on the line with us now is Eileen Sylvan-Johnson. She's a lecturer and program manager in environmental studies at Bowdoin College. Eileen, thanks for giving us a call. I understand you're in Copenhagen right now.
I am. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
So I doubly thank you for taking the time out of your journey. I want to ask you about this idea of social vulnerability and measuring social vulnerability in terms of sea level rise. What does that mean?
So I think big picture, when we're thinking about the ways that our communities are vulnerable, is absolutely the things we've been talking about. What roads might be inundated by sea level rise? What bridges might we have to repair? I mean, that's the physical vulnerability in essence. But there is another important part of the way that our communities are vulnerable, and that has to do with essentially the social fabric of a community. That's where we might have community members that, in the event of a flood, might be more at risk. Perhaps they're older residents living alone. Perhaps they may not have easy access to a vehicle. And so when we look at the big picture, it's important to kind of develop a metric that allows us to look at a combination of the physical and the social vulnerabilities. So as many of us have been working on adaptation planning over the last few years, talked about this, we thought it really is important to give in the best information we can to local decision makers at a municipal level, the sorts of people that, you know, the Cumberland County EMA are working with. And there's been a lot of great work done on social vulnerability, but it often focuses on more urban areas. And we wanted to give something that was really more catered to rural communities. So we spent a lot of time looking at a lot of studies, and we wanted to develop something that was more specific to Maine. And we have an older resident, older age population. We have a number of residents who really are reliant on natural resource livelihoods. So if there's a disruption there, there's some long-term implications for them. And in working through this, we came up with a methodology that gives information that's really catered to a local level and really includes the kind of information that we felt would be most helpful for decision makers. So when we look at, as you were talking about, a road that might lose access, if we have a higher percentage of residents who are over 65 and living alone, that might help decision makers think about where they need to make investments if the big picture is how do we really protect as many of our residents as possible.
Eileen, as your research is indeed part of the tool that I was talking about with Jeremy, isn't it? The Coastal Risk Explorer tool that is on the internet.
Yes, that's right. So I've been doing a lot of work. I do a lot of work with my students around these questions of social vulnerability. And it's just been a really great partnership to be able to see something like this get out in the hands of decision makers so that they can be putting things in place, like what we were talking about. How do we put in ordinances? How do we address this through our comprehensive plans?
And if I could just add that I think Eileen is maybe a little bit humble. She has done some really great work in making bringing academia into this, you know, where the rubber hits the road with this work. And so this social vulnerability aspect of sea level rise planning, risk scenarios is such a key part of planning for the future and thinking about where are the most important places to work, because climate change and sea level rise can be such an overwhelming topic. Where do we get started with this? And so starting with the most vulnerable communities, I think, is a great way to start with a small piece of this very large and complicated puzzle.
Eileen, before we let you go, why don't you tell us what you think at this point is most important for the people of Maine or even scientists to understand?
Well, I think it's really important that we just take steps forward, that we access the great professionals that we really have in the state of Maine. I think from the lens of thinking about social vulnerability and social resilience, the other thing I want to point out is that we have a lot of things going for us. Rural communities really are resilient because they have a lot of social capital. We have people that help each other. They look out for their neighbors. They volunteer for fire departments. And I think that in addition to thinking about where do we make investments, we also want to really think about how that can help us in the next, you know, decades to come. And so what I've said is that the way we build resilience is we get people involved. We get them involved in the local hazard mitigation plans or their local EMAs. We have them come to and be participants. So in addressing some of the things we need to do on adaptation planning, we can, I believe, really help with social resilience by getting people involved, getting them to know their neighbors, having them feel like they're part of solving some of these, you know, big challenges that we're facing ahead.
Well, Eileen, thanks so much for calling in today. Eileen Sylvan-Johnson, a lecturer and program manager in environmental studies at Bowdoin College. Margaret, what she said is music to your ears. How can people get involved in their local emergency management agency?
You can talk with us. You can talk with your local emergency managers. We are in the beginning stages of revising our hazard mitigation plan. We are going to be doing some major outreach to get public opinion. So talk to us about what you think the hazards are. Talk to us about what your concerns are, because we need to know this information in order to be able to provide a plan that is a functional working plan.
In most towns, small towns in Maine, who is the EMA person?
Typically, it is the fireman, fire chief, but it could be a select board person or just anybody who will take the job. There does have to be a local EMA director for every town. We have some excellent folks in Cumberland County, and they are more than willing to talk, and they want to talk with folks. So please connect with them.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'd love to hear from you. What are your comments and questions about sea level rise, your community, and the future? This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And Gracie Theater's Women of the World on October 13th, a celebration of diversity and the power of music. GracieTheater.com.
Next time on Living on Earth, how tech can soon tell us about the species we encounter.
In the future, you're going to be able to take a walk through the woods, see an organism, and simply touch it, and from its DNA barcode sequence, gain its identity and everything else that humanity knows about it.
I'm Bobby Bascom, Barcoding Life. That's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
That's coming up Sunday morning at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
On NPR and ABC News, Cokie Roberts was a trusted voice.
President Carter said that he is committed to a universal plan.
And we know that trade wars create global recessions.
A broadcast news pioneer, author, wife, mother, colleague, friend. I'm Michelle Martin. Join us as we honor her life and legacy, a remembrance of Cokie Roberts, tomorrow from NPR News.
You can hear that tomorrow afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what is and isn't being done to address rising coastal waters due to climate change. In the studio with me, Jeremy Bell, who is River and Coastal Restoration Director for the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Peter Slovinsky, a marine geologist with the Maine Geological Survey. And Margaret Cushing, Emergency Management Coordinator with Cumberland County EMA. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And just handed a news release on Monday. Governor Mills is going to address the United Nations about Maine's efforts to combat climate change, and she's going to talk about the Renewable Portfolio Standard and the Maine Climate Council. And also a note, on Monday, Maine Calling will be discussing the Maine Climate Council with two of the members of that. On the line with us now is Representative Lydia Bloom. She represents part of York. Lydia, thanks for giving us a call.
Oh, thank you for including me. It's a pleasure to be on.
I've seen on some of the maps that show projected sea level rise in Maine that York County could and will be the hardest hit by sea level rise. Tell us about the bill you propose that has been signed into law.
Yes, it was a bill to help municipalities prepare for sea level rise. That was the title. And it was actually the first bill with the title of sea level rise in the title that was signed into law ever. And that shows how the thinking has changed from on a state level, that we're accepting it now as a consideration in both state and municipal planning efforts. It recognizes that the effects of sea level rise are important environmental, fiscal, and public safety issues for Maine and all of its coastal communities. So it's a very good foundational law that will hopefully just be the beginning of getting things, getting climate action in our statutes. And the reason it came about was because York, the town that I represent, was the first to put sea level rise in its comprehensive plan. And I thought that was a great idea for the rest of Maine to do. So that's why that bill was put forth. But it took 6 years to get into law. The other thing that York is and has taken a very proactive role in addressing these issues. But it's not something that every town can do. There are a lot of people are doing a lot of different things, especially in southern Maine. Some of it's working, some of it's not working. And that's one of the things that we're going to be able to now take a leadership role from the state standpoint and figure out how we can best help our municipalities. And that may also be through regional efforts. For example, there's a regional initiative that's being proposed by the six southern coastal communities to try to get together and to hire one person that could help with all their coastal resiliency needs. So there's so that's something that I hope that the state can encourage. We can raise this profile of sea level rise and help bring people in so we get more ideas and more solutions on the table.
Well, Lydia, thanks so much for calling in today. That's Lydia Bloom. She represents parts of York in the state legislature. Margaret, when you hear what she's saying, and she's this new bill doesn't mandate but encourages, my understanding, towns, communities to incorporate planning for sea level into the work that they do, is this enough?
It's a start, and it's a very good start. I think most of our coastal communities here in Cumberland County are considering sea level rise, and they are starting to work towards planning for that. Just as kind of an aside here, I would also say that in climate change, we also have to consider the inland towns, because increasing storms, increasing intensity of storms does have an impact on the interior towns, too. So those towns are beginning to see the need for planning, too.
I'd like to add real quick, I think it's a really important point that Lydia, Representative Bloom made, was the fact that now that there is a bill and actual language that codifies and brings sea level rise on a statewide level. We've had a lot of work over the past few years where one municipality would be doing quite a bit of work on sea level rise and storms and resiliency to coastal flooding, while their neighbors wouldn't necessarily be doing anything. So we end up with what we call kind of a patchwork of resilience, which isn't really the best way of approaching this. So having something at the state level that's actually in language that says, you know, it's really important to consider this and look at it, and now having the Climate Council being formed at the state level, which is going to be looking at potentially solidifying what scenarios should be looked at from the statewide level, is actually a step in the right direction.
Peter, Jeremy.
We're here talking about sea level rise, which is great, but we recognize that there are so many people in Maine that don't live on the coastline, and that's why, as Margaret pointed out, inland flooding is such a big issue as well, and we are just putting the final touches on a culvert flood modeling, so where culverts and streams meet, and we're doing is essentially the same tool for inland communities, so we can also provide solutions to Maine's inland towns as well.
What's your timeline on that? When do you hope to have it ready?
We're going through the data right now and making sure that it's accurate, because that's one of the most important things. You want to be credible when you go out into the communities. I think we should have something we can share now. When we, as far as a tool, I think maybe 6 to 9 months okay. for that.
Great. We'll go to William calling from Barrington, New Hampshire. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, need exists for improved interlocking blocks for retaining walls, seawalls, foundations, buildings, and other applications. I have a patent pending on an interlocking block that connects together through the inside walls with mechanical hardware, as side holes in the center of each side of the block and connecting holes in the corners. And you reach in with your put nut, bolts, and washers, and you connect them together mechanically. And they can be mounted to existing seawalls, and you can build them higher than the water is right now, or it's going to be. And the centers of the wall would be filled with a rebar and pipes and conduits. You'd pass them through horizontally and vertically throughout all the whole structure. Then you put the face plates on the outside of the structure, and then you pour hydraulic cement inside and make one solid pour for the whole seawall or building or structure, and they could be used for protecting the homes that are going to be taken over with the water. You can stop by pouring a slab and having some anchors go deep down in the ground and connect the blocks to them, and you can go have them cascading.
William, thanks so much for calling and telling us about what you've invented. I invite you to go onto the Maine Calling Facebook page and add some more information about it onto our comments section. I'm sure that everyone in the audience and our guests in the studio agree that creative solutions are going to be needed in the future. But Peter, I want to talk to you about the whole concept of seawalls. I mean, we heard from Lydia Bloom just a minute ago, and in her part of Maine, there are a lot of seawalls. Are seawalls going to be the solution in many communities?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that in some areas there's going to be the need to protect the existing infrastructure that's there. And from an economic standpoint, especially, there's going to be the need to actually do that. You know, some of our larger cities in the United States are grappling with this right now. For instance, New York and Boston are thinking about, you know, what areas do they definitely have to protect and what areas do they have to think about adapting other ways, for instance. I think the same thing is going to apply to some of Maine's communities. I mean, right now, where the regulations that are in place actually limit what you can or can't do with seawalls. No new seawalls can be put, for instance, in southern Maine's coastal sand dune systems. But you can adapt a seawall, an existing seawall that might be in place, that if that seawall is less damaging to the coastal sand dune system. So there has to be a balance of the protection that it provides with lessening the actual impact of that seawall on, say, the neighboring beach or dune. Because as we geologists know, and a lot of folks know, I mean, the seawall is made to protect property. It doesn't protect the natural resources around it or in front of it. Anytime you put a hard structure into a very dynamic environment, you're introducing something that is going to exacerbate the level of erosion in front of it. So there needs to be a balance that needs to be struck there. And that's a great discussion going into the future as to how do we adapt our existing hardened communities And then what do we do in the communities where we don't have solid structures in place already?
All right. Well, William, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to an email from Robin. I'd like to hear a discussion about economic systems in our state that will be affected by climate change and sea levels rising. Portland currently has an economy that is highly dependent on tourism of its downtown area. Portland is a bastion of economic productivity in the state. How will rising sea levels affect the entire economic outlook based on the absence of these areas for tourists to visit?
Well, I'll take a quick stab. Obviously, I'm not an economist, but in our tool, one thing we do try to do is to quantify and give a rough number on road fixes in a certain town. So if you clicked on, say, the town of Biddeford, it would give you an estimate at a 3-foot sea level rise scenario, approximately how much money it would cost to upgrade the road so that they would be out of the water. And so that's not the whole piece of the puzzle, obviously, like the email suggests, but it's one aspect of trying to get the conversation started because this person is absolutely correct. This problem is going to cost us a lot of money. And one of the points that we try to make is that being proactive and planning for the future is much less expensive than reacting later and trying to fix problems that already exist.
We'll go to Lisa calling from Topsom. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead. Lisa, are you there? All right. Well, hopefully if you stepped away from the phone, Lisa, you can call back. An email from Ellen. What is the DOT doing to prepare for sea level rise regarding ferries' docking abilities on year-round inhabited, unbridged Maine islands? We don't have anybody from the MDOT here. Anybody here know the answer, Peter?
I can say that DOT has been quite proactive in terms of taking sea level rise into account in their terms of their designs from a cost-to-benefit standpoint. So in other words, for dollar spent, how much benefit do you get out of that? And they've been looking at several different scenarios of sea level rise. If I recall correctly, it includes looking at a 4-foot rise in sea level and whether or not they can adapt existing infrastructure to that and have it make sense from a cost to benefit. And if they can't, then they actually look at a slightly lower amount, which would be 2 feet. So it's a slight bit different, but they have been very proactive in looking at how bridges, ferry terminals, and other kinds of infrastructure could be adapted to sea level rise.
Margaret?
Our towns are also looking at that. What do they need to do? So there are some studies that are going on currently, and there are some projected and possible solutions, but they are working with DOT to make sure that those are going to be applicable to their situations and are going to make things better for them and not worse. So they have that in mind.
All right.
Yeah, and just one quick thing I'd like to add is communities, of course, yes, they've been very, very proactive in this, and one of the easiest things that they've been doing, I think this is what I call kind of like low-hanging fruit that they're going after, is changing some of their ordinances for new development in floodplains. So if you're already in a floodplain and you're going to be rehabbing your building, or your building was damaged for some reason, or you're building a new structure, you can build it higher. It's called freeboard. It's increased freeboard. So in the state of Maine, we require 1 foot of freeboard in the floodplain right now, which is already over and above national standards. But a lot of communities are looking at 2 or even 3 feet above freeboard so that some of that new infrastructure that's going in is going to be that much more resilient to existing storms and potential future flooding from sea level rise.
And an example of that, isn't it, is what Portland has announced just recently about things in the coastal flood overlay, that maybe if you're willing to build the building in such a way that it would be able to handle a flood, maybe we'll give you some more feet of height.
And the easiest way, and some buildings are already doing that, is where you don't put critical infrastructure on the lowest floor. You put parking, you raise all the utilities, things like that, and then you put the stuff above it.
You don't put the generator on the ground.
Yeah, you don't
floor.
Put the generator or the people on the ground. You put, where people you can park, and you move so the parking garage floods, and then that's not the end of the world. But if you have critical infrastructure there, that's a big problem.
We're talking about sea level rise in the future in Maine communities. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. If you're going to email, tweet, or post to Facebook, do it quickly. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Diversions, Puzzles, and Games by Maine Mall. committed to bringing people together with new and classic games and a variety of puzzles. DiversionsGames.com. The Portland Food Co-op, a community-owned market featuring a wide selection of local and organic products, open to everyone 7 days a week. And Foothills Management, committed to energy-efficient senior housing and commercial space in western and mid-coast Maine. Learn more at foothillsmanagement.com.
Maine's warming climate is posing new challenges all over the state, including for Maine's fisheries. But some say that with change comes opportunity.
We can be positive, we can be proactive, we can look to the future. It doesn't all have to be the worst case scenario.
All this week, Maine Public is joining hundreds of news outlets around the world for Covering Climate Now. You can also find the series online at mainepublic.org/climatenow.
Scientists are sifting through the sandy soil along the Connecticut River, looking for evidence of a killer.
Long legs, big eyes, huge jaws, and they'll look for their prey, slice into the body walls with their giant jaws, incapacitate their prey so they're just immobile, and then eat them while they're alive.
But this vicious hunter is also one of the most endangered species in our region. On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll take you on a trip with researchers who are trying to save it. Please join us.
That's this afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Rising Coastal Waters in Maine. My guests are Peter Solvinsky with the Maine Geological Survey, Margaret Cushing with Cumberland County EMA, and Jeremy Bell with the Nature Conservancy. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Peter, we've been talking about, and Jeremy, we've been talking about this great new tool, and it really is interesting. You could waste a lot of time on the internet looking at different towns, but it looks at what different sea level rise scenarios might look like in different, not just towns, but neighborhoods. And we've already talked about, you know, sort of the economic impact, what it would mean for people, what it would mean for infrastructure, but it also looks at the environmental impact.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the unique things about this tool is it actually pulls together the social, environmental, and infrastructure-based factors that we need to consider. And we can't separate ourselves from our environment. It's just not something that we should be doing as humans. I mean, we're integral to it, and we impact it in both ways. And for instance, our marshes are very key to creating sustainable resiliency for our coastal communities because they absorb pollutants, they absorb wave energy, same thing with our sand dunes. But the tool allows you to look at potentially how marshes might change in the future in response to sea level rise. That's something we can't not link our infrastructure to our existing environmental features that are there.
Yeah, and I think Pete probably said it better than I could, but that's really what we're trying to do is recognize we need this great infrastructure. We use it every day for, to go to work, go to the grocery store, go to school. But at the same time, when we're doing this planning, and especially considering sea level rise, to consider our natural systems, coastal marshes, dune ecosystems, and those pieces of the coastline that provide a lot of benefits to people as far as flood mitigation, improved water quality, and those sorts of things. They're such key pieces of our iconic Maine coastline that we want to combine that planning together and create synergies there.
We're going to go to Karen calling from Portland. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So my question, I might have missed the answer to it, but I was wondering what sea level rise would look like in my neighborhood going forward and how I would find that information.
Oh, well, that's what our whole show is about, Karen. Jeremy, remind us about the Coastal Risk Explorer tool.
Yeah, so Karen, thanks for the question. If you go to, if you Google Maine Coastal Risk, you can get to our page and then you click on...
Or go to our webpage or Facebook page.
Yeah, okay. A lot of different avenues to get there. But so if you get to our website and you click on Coastal Risk, the Coastal Risk button, you can then go to your town. I don't know what town you live in, but you can click on your specific community and actually zoom in and find where you live, and you'll be able to go through those sea level rise scenarios for yourself.
Yeah, the only other thing I'd add is that Maine Geological Survey also has its own little mapping portal tool on the web. If you just Google Maine Geological Survey and sea level rise, it's just a web-based tool, similar to what Jeremy's describing, but it just shows your inundation scenarios. It doesn't show any of the social impacts, environmental impacts, or anything. It just leaves it all open to interpretation, but it shows you what potentially might get wet. So,
Margaret, how helpful are these tools to not only what you do at EMA, but also when you're trying to get the word out to others?
Well, they're extremely helpful for us, but it's also something that we really encourage people to look at, because it's great to understand that sea level rise is happening. It's great to understand that climate change is happening, but what does it mean to the homeowner? What does it mean to the person who's living in that area? These tools help to figure out whether their homes are going to be impacted, and once they understand that, they can take measures to mitigate the situation. So these tools are a very vital part of the public education program that all of us are involved in to help people become more prepared.
Thanks, Karen, for your call. We'll go to Peter calling from his car. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm sitting on the longest on-ramp in the interstate system and headed for the Common Ground Fair, so I'm off to a good weekend. I want to speak about the general notions being spread today are mostly about being adaptive. Human beings are very adaptive, and it's one of the reasons why we're so successful on the planet. However, we are not talking about sustainability. One of the most disappointing versions of sustainability that I heard came from the president of Bath Iron Works, who said, well, we changed from making boats out of wood to making boats out of steel. That wasn't a very good idea about sustaining life on the planet. It was like, let's keep this business rolling. A lot of what I've heard today is like, let's keep the tourism rolling, assuming that there are going to be a tourist. Let's talk about the rubber meeting the road, assuming that we're going to be able to compound rubber and have a road to drive on. I suggest that most of what is being talked about today is going to be maybe effective over the next three quarters of a generation. Our grandchildren are not even going to be speaking the same language that you folks are talking about today.
Peter, I appreciate your call. Go ahead, Jeremy. I know the Nature Conservancy does a lot of other work as well, not just making the Coastal Explorer risk tool.
Yeah. And I think a lot of his points are well taken, but I would just say that we care about people and nature both, and we're trying to do planning for to keep people safe and also to keep healthy ecosystems as well. And so it's true, we talked a lot about risk and safety to people as well. But we really care a lot about nature, and a lot of these tools are intended to focus on that as well.
Yeah, and I think the point, also the other point the caller was maybe trying to make is, you know, here we are sitting and talking about how we adapt to some of these things. And, you know, mitigation is a whole nother aspect of this discussion as it relates to climate change, which is one of the driving factors of sea level rise, which could be a whole nother topic for Maine Calling and probably for days. And that's one thing that the Climate Council at the state level is going to be trying to tackling, you know, partially the mitigation problem, which is actually driving a lot of the changes that we're seeing in terms of warmer weather, warmer climate, sea level, which is one of the first things that we're seeing from a warming climate. Tying that adaptation to the concept of mitigation is very important, and it's definitely a discussion we have to have and we are having at the state level for sure.
We're going to go to Izzy, who's calling from Mechanic Falls. Hi, Izzy. Go ahead.
Is there anything that kids can do to stop the water rising?
Izzy, thanks so much for call. Can I ask you how old you are?
7.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hi, Izzy. It's so great to hear you calling in, and I'm getting a little misty here. But I would just say that this is one of the great hopes of this work, is to hear that there are young people out there who are the next generation that are going to be facing these issues. And today is the climate rallies that are going on all around the world. And my own daughter, Sonia, who's in eighth grade, is at the climate rally today in Portland, and I'm so proud of that. And, activists like Greta Thunberg, that sort of thing, I would encourage Izzy to go to those climate rallies to get motivated and inspired by other students and people her age to really get engaged in that. And that's the best way, I think, is through school and colleagues, classmates, to learn more about this and where, the ways that she can act.
I think that's all. Oh, that's great, Jeremy. And I also got that. Thank you, Izzy, for calling in. That was great. Izzy, the only thing I would say is that every little thing you can do to help the environment, even if it's little small things, like making sure you're recycling properly or making sure you're composting or you're not spraying your lawn with chemicals so it impacts bees, all the little things that can be done. They may sound small now, but they add up. It's an overwhelming problem when we think about it from the large standpoint. But if we think about it as individuals and the things we can do in our everyday lives that are better for the environment, it's going to be better for us in the long run.
Izzy, I too thank you for calling. One of the things that I would suggest to you is that you talk to your friends, you talk to your schoolmates about how important the environment is and how much it means to us here in Maine, because our way of life here in Maine is very closely related to the environment. And if we can protect it and we can get our young people to protect it, starting from a very early age, we have a lot better chance of having it the way it is now later on.
Izzy, thanks so much for calling. We're going to go to Margie calling from Jonesboro. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Hey, you guys. I own a peninsula, okay? That's where my house is. It goes way out into the water. And one time, it was a while back, I had a dream. In a dream, I saw a great big wave looking out the window. I said, oh, my God, can you believe that? But what do you think about that? It's a peninsula. It's surrounded by water.
I don't know Jonesboro that well, but one of the issues that we address in the Coastal Risk Explorer is peninsula communities. And so there is a chance, and I'm very curious to know about your house exactly, but peninsula communities, even if there's a small flood across the road, it can cut off an entire community in a peninsula or town like Arousic, Jonesboro, for example, and other communities like that. So this is the real issue.
Margie, thanks for calling. Nice to hear from you. We're going to go to Danny calling from Portland. Hi, Danny. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say one thing. All of your engineers and scientists and what they're saying is all very important. But I use this as an example. If there's a major water leak in a city, they can't do anything until they shut the water off and then they fix the leak. Okay, now, I forget conservative, liberal, anything. We've got people, and I would say Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are talking about coming after the oil companies, coming after the polluters, and stopping it. And we have the technology to do it. So the total Republican Party, along with the president, are talking about climate change being a hoax. It is not a hoax. Tell them to start thinking about themselves, their children, their grandchildren, and do something about it. We've got to start voting for people who are going to do something about this, not putting the same old prostitutes in who are paid, bought and paid for by the corporations in this country.
Danny, I know that many people in our audience agree with you, and thank you for your call on this hour. And I just... You know, we're almost out of time, Jeremy, but one of the major reasons we were doing this program today was because of your Coastal Risk Explorer tool that's on the internet. And maybe just wrap up with what do you hope that this tool will mean for people who live along the coast of Maine or even people who care about the coast of Maine?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I would just say that, this issue of climate change, it can feel so much like doom and gloom. And what we're really trying to do here is to offer solutions. And so the first point is to put the information out there. But what we really want to do is we want to have people contact us, contact Pete, Margaret, and the emergency management agencies, get involved and start thinking about solutions, because that's the way to avoid that doom and gloom, to look for the future and figure out positive solutions for our community.
Peter.
Yeah, I think all the tools that are out there, especially, including the Coastal Risk Explorer, allows you to better understand your existing risk and vulnerability and how it might change moving into the future. Within that allows you to develop your ways that you as an individual or you as a community need to adapt, and then figuring out the hardest part, which is how you actually implement the way you're going to be adapting to things. So all these tools that are out there help stimulate that discussion.
Margaret.
And I think one of the important things that we would like to have you take away is that you need to become involved. As a community member, as a citizen, you need to become involved. And talking to one of our groups, talking with your local EMA directors is an important part of your being prepared and helping us to prepare.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. That's Margaret Cushing, Emergency Management Coordinator with the Cumberland County EMA. Jeremy Bell is River and Coastal Restoration Director for the Nature Conservancy in Maine. And Peter Slovinsky, a marine geologist with the Maine Geological Survey. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Our theme was written by Mike Gendro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.